Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now it's time for our Friday Forum. We're joined by Barry Ward, Dunleary TD for Fine Gael, Sinead Gibney, Dublin Rathdown TD with the Social Democrats, and Pat Leahy, political editor with the Irish Times. We will talk about the presidential election in a moment, but first of all, Pat Leahy, he didn't get the Peace Prize.
Well, no, Pat, but as they say in Cork every year, there's always next year, you know. So I think there's actually something to be said for stringing Trump along in the hope that he gets the prize.
And keeps the peace.
And keeps the peace, yeah. And it does seem, I mean, I guess we'll get the full background to the deal and the declaration of the ceasefire and so forth in the coming days. But it does seem to be that it was wrought principally by Trump, and that he banged heads together and forced the Israelis and Hamas together. Now, whether that's a recipe for an enduring peace deal, but jaw is better than war, at least in the interim.
But you give them munitions to pound Gaza City into oblivion virtually, and then you demand a peace.
Well, for sure. I mean, if the Americans and the Trump administration are claiming credit for the peace deal, then they must also shoulder responsibility for the continuation of the conflict. Now, you know, they're not solely to blame. I think there's enough blame here to go around for everybody. But look, you know, a ceasefire is a welcome development. If Trump's vainglory is, or sense of vainglory, is something that can be utilised to produce a peace deal, then I can live with that.
Okay, Barry?
It's obviously very welcome, but you'd have to think how many lives could have been saved if they had done this 7 or 8 months ago.
Well, they did it in January, and then the Israelis broke the ceasefire.
Yeah, and the Americans continued to supply them with arms. And when you look at the American attitude, for example, to sanctions on members of the International Criminal Court who indicted members of the Israeli government and of Hamas as well, the fact that America has played along with this all along actually, I think, obviates the role of Trump as a peacemaker.
Sinead?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's incredibly welcome that this peace deal has arrived, and I think we're all incredibly moved by the scenes we're seeing on social media, having been so distressing for the last 2 years to see people in Palestine rejoicing. But of course, we all have major trust issues with this whole process and with the actors involved, Netanyahu and Trump alike. I mean, we've heard Netanyahu and a succession of his far-right Israeli ministers referring to Palestinians as subhuman, promising to extend the illegal settlements and essentially saying that there will never be a Palestinian state. So it is worrying that as the peace negotiations progress, we are going to be increasingly reliant on the goodwill of those actors, and they have not demonstrated that.
Some of the listeners getting involved. It's great to hear that there's a ceasefire and that the Palestinian people get a reprieve from the constant bombing and murder. Regarding Trump and all of this, he's just a big baby who wants his belly rubbed and ego massaged. But let's not lose focus here. The bombing in retaliation to the disgusting events of October the 7th has served to rid Israel and, by commercial association, the US, the UK and France of all their old munitions. And it's great for keeping the business wheels turning for the arms manufacturers. Pat, is that too cynical?
Well, I mean,
all
I think
the old stocks get used up, and
the way of the world is
again.
That there'll always be a market for arms. I'm afraid, I'm not sure necessarily that's what's been driving this. I think it's politics more than.
But money's been made
more
big
than
time.
Money. Sure, money's always made out of wars. Yeah.
All right, we want to move on to the presidential election, and it kind of got interesting this week, Pat Leahy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think people who were saying, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, this is so boring, it's so dull. Last time I was in here, I think we were talking about, you know, the exclusion of, or the failure of Maria Steen to make it into the race. And everybody was thinking it was going to be terribly dull now. And I think I may have pointed out, Pat, with characteristic prescience, that actually the history of presidential elections has been that there tend to be the most dramatic twists and turns along the way. And so it has proved. I mean, it was very obvious this day last week, I think, that Jim Gavin was not really flying as a candidate. He was having a difficult time coming to terms with the demands of what is, after all, the most demanding campaign.
Do you think Micheál Martin would have preferred him to finish as an also-ran rather than have to step out?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, look, this is excruciatingly difficult for Fianna Fáil. And will continue to be so for the rest of the campaign, because, of course, Jim Gavin's name remains on the ballot paper, even if he is something of a zombie candidate at this stage. But, you know, I suspect that there will be further twists and turns. And maybe not as dramatic as that.
The party activists having to climb up those ladders this weekend to take down the posters.
They haven't done it yet.
No, they promise, I think, this weekend is going to. So what's your reaction, Barry? I mean, Heather, besides the Reichstag error, I mean, she's had a quiet campaign.
Well, Heather didn't make an error, but I mean, I think...
No, blaming the underlings would be like me blaming a researcher on air.
I think when people go into the booths, and I think one of the things I heard one of the commentators saying early on in the election is this will all actually crystallise in the last week, and I still think that's true. There's an awful lot of people out there who haven't decided how they're going to vote, and I think when people go into the booth, they're going to be looking for somebody who is dependable, who's going to represent Ireland on the world stage in a way that is never going to embarrass us, is never going to call into question our motivation on things. And Heather has the experience of doing that. She has proved all the way through the campaign that she has the capacity to be a solid pair of hands that is not going to drop the ball and is going to represent us with distinction.
You know, safe pair of hands versus Catherine Connolly.
Who's obviously got great momentum in her campaign. I mean, we came behind her 3 months ago as one of the first parties to endorse her. The first party to endorse her, I believe, alongside PVP. And it's just been incredible to watch this momentum grow and really kind of capture the public imagination. We had her out in Dundrum last night and it was just a fantastic event. So, what we've seen in the last couple of days, sadly, is kind of a you know, I think Fine Gael are panicking and coming out in a very defensive, I would say.
No, hang on a second. The attack, if you like, was about her hesitancy in whether or not she would employ a rapist as an advisor, because rehabilitation is rehabilitation. If you take someone who's got a suspect political background and a conviction for arms offences, if they can be rehabilitated, if you're consistent, surely a sex offender can be too.
Well, I'll answer that in a second. But what I'm referring to is, I think, I mean, an ex-Fine Gael minister and a broadcaster on this station essentially saying that he said that if he was advising government, he would smear the bejesus out of her. And I think can see that playing out.
Nothing to do with Fine Gael now.
Can I finish the answer? Because, we're seeing it playing out. I mean, I think all he was doing is saying the quiet part out loud. That's all that's happening, because they are panicking. I mean, I am actually, I think the issue of prisoner rehabilitation, it's an area of work I've done a lot in. And I think it's actually really interesting to see it in the public domain. And I respect Catherine's answer and how she handled that. She took her time to consider it. And she respects rule of law. And that's exactly what she was saying, is that if they're on the sex offender list.
The very idea, first of all, if you bring someone who might be regarded as a fifth columnist into Dáil Éireann, you don't know for sure. We're supposed to be rehabilitated. It's another thing bringing someone into Áras an Uachtaráin who will, by definition, because of a conviction, be on the sex offender's record, probably for life.
Which is what she also said she wouldn't do. And I think it's just
eventually,
so ridiculous
eventually
to say
she did it.
To focus on that when she is putting forward so many substantive issues, that this is a hypothetical put out to her that people are choosing to focus on. And that's what I'm saying, is that it's very clear that it's attack mode from Fine Gael.
It's the logical extension of what she did before. But what amuses me about what Sinead has said is that it's attack mode. So when tough questions are asked of a candidate like Catherine Connolly, that's attack mode. When they're asked of ministers, then we're just holding the government to account. If you're a candidate in the general election, you have to be able to answer tough questions. You have to be able to stand up to that question. And it's not okay to hum and haw and say that you haven't considered a particular scenario that leads directly from something you've done in the past.
In the presidential election, of course, she's going to be put, hard questions are going to be put to her, and she's handled them all brilliantly. I mean, she respects the rule of law.
Agree.
And exactly as she's done in all of her answers, she has shown herself to be transparent, to be considered, to be knowledgeable and expert in the areas that we're dealing with. So,
do you think there's a blatant double standard between rehabilitation for the person that was convicted in the Special Criminal Court, but not rehabilitation for a putative rapist that might be
No, because I think the point about the sex offenders list from a rule of law position is that they still present a danger to society. That's the whole point of it. I mean, I've worked with prisoners who tell me that you get two sentences handed down to you, and Barry knows this area well. you get the sentence that you serve in prison, and then what follows you around for the rest of your life is a stigma and a discrimination in society where people don't give you jobs. Like, we know this, that prisoners don't get jobs, where people who've served sentences don't get jobs. So, of course, I mean, I think the idea that Leinster House is some sacrosanct place where former prisoners shouldn't work is ridiculous. It is our house as a people.
That's not the argument at all.
That's exactly
She was convicted of a firearms offence by the Special Criminal Court. You can't finish, Sinead, but you can't finish by spouting nonsense.
I'm not spouting nonsense.
That is totally inconsistent.
You're
just after saying essentially, therefore, that because you're on the Sex Offenders Register, what, you should never be employed? But if you have a previous conviction from the Special Criminal Court for a firearms offence, it's okay.
What I'm suggesting is that the criminal justice system offers us structures by which we can make these decisions. And that's exactly what Catherine did. She considered it over 24 hours, which is the kind of thing that we want a president to do, to consider, to reflect. And that's exactly what she did.
Pat Lee, you're looking, you've raised one eyebrow at least at this.
Yeah, I think that the structure of the campaign going forward for foreseeably will be more of these questions put to Catherine Connolly. Some of them she has dealt capably with. Others she has prevaricated on. She prevaricated for 24 hours on
or
this
reflected.
One. She hasn't. She was asked about whether she had represented banks in repossession cases during the financial crash. And yeah, well, she actually didn't answer the question. She just said she did lots of different types of work as a barrister. She didn't say, and still hasn't said, yes, I did, but I was obligated to.
By the Cabaret Rule, which we all know.
As a barrister.
You
are obligated to do so.
Now, there
are. I mean, Barry can speak with great authority in that. There are circumstances in which a barrister might not.
But this is
not. Just let me finish. But she hasn't actually answered that question. And what Catherine is good at doing is saying, look, give me the questions. And she is completely available to the media at doorsteps every day, in fairness. And she says, I will take the questions. But on some cases, she doesn't answer the question, as in this case.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think she's answered questions well. I mean,
as a matter of fact, she has not said whether she did repossession cases for banks. She simply hasn't. So to say she has answered that question is nonsensical. Now, what she could say is, yes, I did, but I had to.
Yeah, exactly. The Cabaret
Rule.
I do believe that there has been plenty put out there which kind of puts paid to it. Like, and again, I would say that Catherine, what she's trying to do is focus on the issues rather than this constant stream of attacks that's coming at her.
The issues in this sort of a campaign is your record.
And the thing about it is, I'm a barrister. I understand what it is to represent people you don't like and don't agree with. Every barrister has to do that. There is a certain hypocrisy in then standing up on a soapbox about repossessions if you've previously represented banks, but that's another issue. The bigger issue is, if you've done it and you believe in the Cab Rank Rule and you believe the barrister has to have to do this, just say it. Just tell us who you have represented. Tell us who you have put out of their house if that's what you've done. That's if you're not ashamed of it, then answer the question.
I just think that's scraping the barrel to be
Of course you do, because the tough questions when they're put against your candidate is scraping the barrel.
It's not a tough question.
You know, there's an old adage, there's no such thing as bad publicity. When people are talking about Catherine Connolly all the time and not talking about Heather, that is a problem for Fine Gael, for your candidate.
Oh no, I don't agree, because the kind of things they're talking about in the context of Catherine Connolly's record and the questions she has or hasn't answered are problematic for her, because the people who support her, I think, are going to have to be given pause for thought for some of the things she's been involved in.
Is it not the name recognition thing? They're always talking about this.
If you
woman.
Want to talk about name recognition, people know Heather Humphreys, because she's been to every corner of this country as a minister and as she's worked with credit unions, she's been involved in community organisations. There's no problem with name recognition for Heather Humphreys, and people are talking about her. We had her in BlackRock recently. The response for her was incredibly warm. People were delighted to see her. And I think if we look at the mould of the presidency, and those, particularly I'm thinking of people like Mary Robinson, people like Mary McAleese, who filled, and indeed Michael D. Higgins, who filled that job with distinction. Heather Humphreys is much more in that mode of a distinguished politician who has experience on the international stage, and you know she won't let us down.
Would she not be more on the Paddy Hillary
That's what I would have thought. I think Heather Humphreys' pitch so far is a safe pair of hands, whereas Catherine Connolly's pitch is somebody who stands outside the political establishment, somebody who would, I suspect, have an antagonistic relationship, well, certainly with this government, whatever future governments are elected. That is the way I think that the race is shaping up. But as ever in presidential races, candidates can be tripped up by things from their past, by aspects of their characters, for what they have done or maybe not done in the past.
Well, next Tuesday, by the way, we're having a debate here between the two candidates, 9 o'clock. And we want people to inform our conversation to see which of them might be best fitted for the job of Uachtaráin na hÉireann. So if you've got questions or comments that you want us to put to the candidates, you can do it by email, pkdebate@newstalk.com, and then join us next Tuesday to hear the outcome of our deliberations, at least. So this campaign, all the poorer not to have Jim Gavin, or all the richer, Pat?
Well, of course, Jim Gavin is still on the ballot paper.
And isn't that a wrinkle that we don't know how
well,
it will evolve?
Let me briefly give you a scenario here, is that the race tightens in the next 2 weeks, which I would expect it to do. I guess we'll have polls over the next week or so. Polls last week suggested, they still had Jim Gavin in them, they suggested a hefty lead for Catherine Connolly. And though, you know, if you think early polls make a president, then let me introduce you to President David Norris and President A.D. Roach. So I would expect things to tighten in the coming 2 weeks. Now, I spoke to one Fianna Fáil TD in the wake of their Omni shambles during the week, and I said, you know, who do you think that your people, your supporters in your constituency will vote for? And he kind of thought for a minute, he said, I think they'll vote for Jim Gavin. Now, if the race is pretty even going into the final week, we don't know, but that's not an implausible scenario, then it is possible that Jim Gavin's transfers, because his votes will be counted as per normal, his number twos will be distributed as per normal, it is not impossible that Jim Gavin's votes will decide this presidential election.
And what about people staying at home and other people making
their votes
mischief.
won't have any bearing on it.
The wolf tones.
Yeah.
You know, the nation once again becoming the song of the century or whatever, because people decided to make mischief with the BBC.
Yes, but there's a difference between, you know, clicking an online poll and getting off your tail end and going down to the polling station and filling in a ballot. The people who turn up and cast their votes, not the people who spoil their votes, but the people who cast their votes legitimately, are the people who will decide the election.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think we have a very serious and a very informed electorate that take this seriously. Of course, there are going to be a proportion of people who will boaty McBoatface the race. But most people see the importance of this role, of this, you know, the first citizen of the country. And I don't think it's going to play as that much of a feature to be disruptive.
One of the things that comes through when you talk to people is what they want from their president. And most of them want that president to be able to represent us internationally and domestically with dignity and aplomb. That's what they want. I'm not sure they're going to get it from either of those two.
Well, I obviously disagree with that.
I disagree too.
I think Heather Humphreys has a track record of doing exactly that. And people can be confident that if she assumes an office in the Oras, that she will do a very good job. She will not embarrass this country. She will represent us with distinction.
And Catherine, I think, will be an absolute legend of a president. She is classy, she is considered, she is expert, she's a hard worker, she's got principles and values of absolute steel. Can't wait to see.
And your final word on this, Pat?
I mean, I think given the way that I characterised the race earlier, you know, as Catherine Connolly is someone who's outside the political establishment, I think one of the big efforts that she has made is to say, you know, it's not as if she would refuse to meet President Trump or perform her state duties. I think she's been very careful to do that. And I think that that kind of signifies an awareness in the campaign that if she is to generate a winning majority, then she has to appeal to a lot of those middle ground voters that constitute all majorities in this
well.
Country.
Well, we have to leave it there. Barry Ward, Dunleer TD for Fine Gael, Sinead Gibney, Dublin Rathdown TD for the Social Democrats, and Pat Lee, political editor of the Irish Times. Thank you, one and all. That is all we've time for. My thanks to the team, editor Amy Bradley, producer Niamh Dunn, researchers Cian Burns and Dylan Hand, broadcast assistant Anne McCain, Cormac McDonough on sound.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.